This is Ayla Podcast.
Hello and welcome to This is Ayla. I'm Julian Thurgood. Since our last episode, spring finally arrived and passed through Ayla. And on a day where gentle rain in the morning turns to warm sun in the afternoon, I'm going to count that as summer. We've had a few beautiful sunny days already, but I'm hoping for a few more before the nights start drawing in again. Ayla's been opening up over the past few weeks, and we're seeing more visitors and newcomers too. Among the new arrivals are hundreds of lambs dotted around the island, so we know to be extra careful as we drive along the strand. In this episode, we'll hear from a young lady who knows all about lambs and sheep, not just in springtime, but year-round. We will also get an update from ICAG, the Isla Community Access Group, about the state of the Brookladdy to Port Charlotte path, ever nearing completion, and we will hear from Dietmar Finger, the artist whose portraits of Isla faces recently graced the walls of the Gaelic Centre just outside Beaumont. But first, we recently caught up with Dr. Pat McGran of ICAG.
Good afternoon, and it's Glenn from This is Isla podcast. I was out today in Port Ellen and happened to bump into Pat McGran, as we all know, is the chairman of ICAG. We're just going to have a quick 5 minutes asking him for an update on the Brookladdy Port Charlotte path, and also if we could squeeze out of him some information on the Bridge End Beaumont path. Pat, good afternoon.
Hello, Glenn. Nice to see you again. Yes, I'm pleased to say we've got some very good news in that we've nearly completed the construction of the Brookladdy to Port Charlotte path, the name of which is going to be the Lochindarle Way. This was one of many names suggested by pupils from Port Charlotte School, so we're pleased to adapt it so it will be called the Lochindarle Way. We are literally within 10 days of finishing the construction. Apart from a few signs and a few bits of flippery along the path. I'm pleased to say that several people have donated benches, memorial benches and picnic tables to the path, so we're now more or less fully furnished. So that's good. One forgets when you're walking along the path, particularly when you're involved with the construction, but if you just lift your eyes and look at the view, that's the beauty of the path, the magnificent views you get along that stretch. So, and the way it's been widely used by the local folk already suggests it's going to be hugely successful in the future. So that's the end of a project which has started in 2016. By a small group in Brookladdy, and I think you were one of the initial...
I was, yes.
So thanks for that.
Pleasure. I know, because I'm just interjecting, I looked at an email the other day, and the first email to get a group together to look at the path was in 2015. So the original thought and the idea from some of the locals at Brookladdy came up with the idea of a path. I started doing something and Paul Graham started looking at it. So basically we got together and then gave it to you.
And, and the rest is history.
Yes, quite. Anyway, thank you very much for that. We're very much, especially in the Brookladdy side, looking forward to seeing the end when it's finished.
Yes, I think one of the most important things that we have learnt with that project is how desperately important it is to have local people involved in the management and the planning of the route, because they have the local knowledge and the ideas. And so when we move on to future projects, we would really like to encourage people who live local to Beaumont Bridge End to join in, become members of ICAG and perhaps be on the management group. That is extremely important to us, and I think will be quite an enjoyable journey as we develop to the new pathway.
It's so interesting, and you can't believe the amount of work that the team, yourself and the management group get involved in. But when you look at the Brookladdy path to Port Charlotte, and what a worthwhile job it was, because everybody's saying how fantastic it is, Everybody's desperate to walk on it, including me. Anyway, Pat, thank you very much for spending the short time with us. We're very grateful, and we have an update. And also, we're looking for more people and Bridgend people to join the management committee to take the path from Bamore to Bridgend forward.
Thank you very much.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Stay tuned for those finishing touches on the path, including places to rest and to repair your bicycle, as well as the official opening. Next, we've just passed through one of the busiest times of the year for local farmers who keep sheep. Our own Russell Pollock, a self-confessed townie, had the opportunity to interview Catherine McPherson, an Isla High School student who, when not at school, spends a lot of her time on the farm. Over to the high school recording studio.
Hello and welcome to This Is Isla podcast. Spring is a significant time in the farming calendar. Farmers annually take care of over millions of ewes preparing to give birth. But what actually is involved in this crucial part of the farming calendar? To answer these questions and more is a 16-year-old high school student and farmer, Catherine McPherson. Welcome, Catherine, and thank you for coming along to speak to us.
Thank you.
Now, you've lived and worked on farms basically your entire life. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it's probably worth mentioning here that I am a total townie. I absolutely know nothing about farming apart from what I've seen on Countryfile or Our Yorkshire Farmer. And it's particularly relevant for you because there's a Yorkshire shepherdess who has really brought the issue of women in farming to the forefront. So can you tell me how you got interested in actual farming?
I've always grown up with it, and I practically grew up in a lambing shed, and each year I was over helping the lambs, bottle feeding lambs at the age of 2 and 3.
And how is it a big farm? Is it mainly sheep that you have on the farm?
Yes, it's mainly sheep. We also have 2 horses, 6 hens, and our dogs. But predominantly sheep. We're verging on the number of 300, just over about that many.
Well, that'll keep you busy.
Yes, absolutely.
So we're all familiar with the image of young lambs jumping around fields in spring, but is spring the actual start of the lambing season on Isla?
It's throughout the whole year, because I mean you're always like preparing with topping, and then you've got these lambs that come in spring. And then they're born, and it's all getting them to grow and then selling them again, bettering your stock, getting them all ready, and then starting the whole process over again, and it's a continuous cycle of sheep.
So take us through in a bit more detail there. So starting off, we've got sheep and rams in the field, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they obviously are busy.
Yes, they're very busy. We always make sure that we're very careful of what tucks go to the sheep,
mm-hmm.
and that there's no inbreeding going on, because that can then lead on to further deformities and diseases.
How, out of curiosity, how on earth do you know, how do you make sure that you stop inbreeding going on? Because to me, one sheep kind of looks like
all the others.
And it would be difficult to spot out families.
Well, no, you kind of keep track of your breeding, how old the sheep are, who the father is, because with the breeds you kind of know, it's like a black face, all your young blackies that are born, they're all going to be to that father. Mm-hmm. You either sell them on as breeding stock, meat stock, mm-hmm. or you keep them on and you change your top after a few years so they're not going to their daughters.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And are the sheep discriminate against mates, or is it just anyone? They'll go for anything.
If it's a young sheep, the gimmers that are the sheep that are on their first year, they'll sometimes not take the top.
What was a gimmer?
A gimmer is like a sheep that's it's our first year lambing.
Oh, right, okay.
And they might not necessarily take the top because they're either too immature or they're still young, so they don't know really what's going on.
Okay. So once they've been paired up with the right sort of partner, shall we say. What's the sort of, what's the pregnancy? How long does that take?
Gestation is 5 months minus 5 days.
Okay.
And
that's the same for all different breeds, or is there a slight different?
It can vary between different breeds.
Okay.
Because it just also depends on the size of sheep, condition of sheep, and sheep are ovulating for 24 hours as mm-hmm. well. So sheep have got a 24. The tops have got a 24-hour period to fertilise these sheep.
Right.
Which.
So they've got to be fast.
Yeah, they've got to be fast. They've got to know what they're doing. They've got to be keen.
And once they're, I guess, once we get to the stage where they are ready to give birth, you would probably assume that the farmer doesn't have a lot to do with that, and the lambs basically deliver themselves in the field, but that's possibly my towny experience.
No, you're very right.
So what actually, what's the process for giving birth? Is the farmer involved in that at all?
It depends, because sheep nowadays, we're trying to breed them so that they're easy cares, that we don't have to lamb them, they produce good lambs and they manage on their own. But sometimes you can get overfeeding, and sometimes the sheep can just take in all the food that they get throughout the year and put it into them, mm-hmm. Into the lambs, mm-hmm. and then they end up with big lambs, which they might not necessarily manage. If the sheep are too small, they won't be able to manage these bigger lambs,
mm-hmm.
and that also comes down to topping as well, right. Managing how big the lambs are, putting tops to relatively big sheep so they can manage.
Okay.
But no, if we do have to intervene, it's a straightforward thing, but also we can get lambs that are presented differently, like backwards, legs back, heads back,
mm-hmm.
and also dead lambs, mm. they have to be taken out as well.
Yeah, and I take it you're on call, it's not a 9-to-5 job,
no, so it can occur at any point. It's generally non-stop.
I don't imagine you get a lot of sleep when the sheep are starting the process.
Well, this year I've practically done lambing on my own. Mum was only there for odd jobs and here and there.
Mm-hmm.
But generally I tried to stay over the night. If there was something, 10 o'clock, right, okay, let's not go to bed.
So you would stay out in the field with them?
But it's great though, because it means you've managed to keep that. And if anything did go wrong and you came around in the morning, mm-hmm. and...
You would feel...
Yeah, you'd feel gutted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not so good. And have you got a tent that you stay in the field with, or is it just in the back of the
shed? Just the shed. Stay up in the shed.
Oh, that's not so bad. Some home comforts at least.
Yes.
Heating?
Yes.
Oh, heating, even better. Better. That's good. Nothing worse than being stuck out in the cold.
No. Especially in the snow, because that was a big issue this year.
Was there a lot of snow?
Yes, there was a lot of snow.
Oh, that's not so good. No. You mentioned that sometimes the unfortunate does happen, and a lamb or a ewe don't actually survive. Mm-hmm. What's the kind of process to kind of help? And I will mention that I have seen the Countryfile episode with this exact thing, so I know if you're going to get it right or not.
Generally, if we lose a lamb, it's not the end of the world, because it's not to sound cheesy, but when there is death, there is always new life. And if there's a sheep with a single lamb, we can always find a spare lamb. And that's another thing that with us on this island, we can come together and ask people for lambs and trade pet lambs to keep the sheep, because we generally try and make sure every sheep has got a lamb.
Right.
Because we actually see it as a waste of milk, mm. and something that potentially an orphan lamb could miss out on.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's quite good. And is there any particular process to make sure that the mothers will adopt these wee?
Yes, well, our method is we use the placenta, mm-hmm. of the sheep, we bag it up, and then we wash the lamb with just warm water, just so it's kind of got that more newborn wet,
yep.
kind of wool on it, and then rub the placenta over it to get that sheep smell, because mm-hmm. each sheep's got a significant,
so distinct.
Yeah, each significant smell to mm-hmm. their lamb. But obviously this might not technically work, and other people use method of skinning the lambs, where you just remove the skin off the dead lamb,
mm-hmm.
and put it on
mm-hmm.
An orphan lamb to put to the sheep, and so that way the sheep will know the smell of that lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you foster on a lamb, it'll start drinking the sheep's milk, and yeah. that smell will start going through the lamb.
Ah, right, okay.
And the sheep will be able to know that that's milk. That's
it. And that'll just bond over a period of time, and, mm-hmm. and you won't need the skin or anything.
Usually know when a sheep's going to take a lamb and when it's not.
Right, but okay.
Generally it works.
Did you have many losses this year, or was it not too bad?
It was pretty good. I think the only week we suffered was during the snow, and we did lose a sheep to pneumonia because we were just a bit too late.
Mm-hmm.
And we ended up with our two lambs, who are now called Patch and Polly.
Oh.
but they're doing very well.
And were they adopted by another sheep?
No, unfortunately not, because it was quite late on.
Right.
And we didn't have any more to put them onto, and also they wouldn't have taken to another sheep because they were a lot older.
Right.
Also,
are these now house trained lambs?
Not quite. No, they're still out in the field. They've been let out, and they're still just getting bottle fed here and there.
Right. Okay. Well, that's quite good.
Yeah, that's
quite
good. It was a good outcome for that, apart from losing the sheep, obviously.
That's a shame. So what particular breeds do you actually raise on the farm? And are there any that are particularly well suited to the sort of Islay climate?
We try to keep them suited to the climate because they obviously do better, and there's less maintenance, less product going into them for medication. And the breeds we've got are blackface sheep, like Scottish blackface, mules, which come out of the Scottish blackface crossed with a blue-faced Leicester top. Shetland sheep, which are originally from Shetland. Our North Country Cheviots, they're our meat crop that come out of the mule sheep. And we have the mules as well. Hoping to get Kerry Hills, which are Welsh breed.
Okay.
Panda sheep.
All right, interesting.
They're all very well suited to
the harsher
Islay.
Well, that's good. Yeah. That's interesting. And I can't help but notice that you're also wearing a very snazzy looking body warmer there, with the logo Ladies Who Lamb.
It does my trademark.
What can you tell us about that?
Ladies Who Lamb is a UK group, and it is on Facebook. And it's where lots of women go on, and they ask questions, help each other. We even trade lambs on that as well, trade lambs and sheep. And there's about 16,000 members on it.
They've got
their own website. Yes.
And all lady farmers?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic.
Maybe a man here and there, but no.
Don't want to discriminate.
No. no, it's generally women, and... It's a great place just to share different experiences and gain knowledge as well. And I know there's a lot of beginner lambers and shepherdesses on there that gain a lot of info from there. So all in all, it's a very good group to be on, and it's got a good atmosphere. So yeah.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And do you want to continue in farming through your life, or have you got plans for a slightly different direction?
Well, my backup plan really would be just to be a contract lammer, shearer, and just shepherd in general. But I'm on track to becoming a vet, and I potentially like to go to Glasgow to study that.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
And then specialise in farm vet.
That'll be good. Well, you've certainly got the experience for it.
Mm-hmm,
and also the sheepdog to go with it.
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Well, that's brilliant. Thank you very much for coming along.
Okay.
And thank you for answering and hopefully filling in all our townies that don't know anything about farming. Brilliant. Thank you again. So this is Islay Podcast, and we're signing off. Thank you.
An exceptional young lady who lambs. I'm amazed at how Catherine makes the time for all her many school activities, as well as taking care of her flock on the farm. Thank you, Catherine, for sharing your story with us. We wish you much luck in your future endeavours. Finally, we welcome Dietmar Finger to the podcast. His exhibition, Islay Faces, was displayed at the Gaelic Centre during June, and we met him recently at his studio in Carn Duncan.
It's Glenn, and this afternoon we have taken the opportunity of visiting Dietmeyer at his studio at Cardunken. He has an exhibition of paintings at the Gaelic Centre. They are local people, very local. Regretfully, some of them are no longer with us. But however, once you're in the Gaelic Centre, you can see the likeness, especially to, for example, Ella Edgar, Lord Robertson, Duncan McGilvery, Dot, who regretfully, as we all know, on Isla has passed away. However, enough of me rabbiting on. We'll now hand over to Dietmeyer, and if you would explain how the idea of the painting of local persons, may not necessarily be celebrities, came about.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting story. I've prepared, I have a sketchbook here for you to show you. I think it was 2013 when I did a sketch for Duncan McGilvery, a portrait. And I was wondering, I was approaching him, asking him if he would trade in a portrait for one of his private cask whiskies. Oh yes, Dietmeyer, yeah, why not? Go ahead, he said. And so I showed him this sketch and he liked it, he liked the style, but then I had to do a clean painting, which is kind of a different story. So I did three paintings I was happy with and showed them to Duncan and Susan, asking if they liked one or just to pick their favorite, and this is what they did. And Susan's painting is now in the exhibition as well, as is my sketch. This is how it all started, and this was 2013. Of course, at the time I hadn't any idea of doing a big kind of collection of portraits, but 2018 or 2019, I think, by the end of 2008, I lost track with the time because of this pandemic. Let's say 2019, I flipped through my sketchbook and I found this sketch again. And I thought, there's so many cool faces on Isla. Why not doing a few more portraits? I could do probably 20 and display them in the Gaelic College or in a school or in the Brugladi Hall or wherever. So I approached people, and Ella, you mentioned Ella. Ella was one of the first because she was a friend and she knew me. And I approached other people introducing this idea and asked if they wanted to take part. I would give them the portrait for free. I said, this is not about selling any artwork. It's just, it's a project for the community. I think the community needs more culture and more projects which are not connected to whiskey or gin or booze, you know, something different. And to my surprise, almost everybody I approached said okay. Even when I ran out of friends to ask and asked people like Dot, he was very puzzled. Of course, he didn't know me. He might have spotted me during shopping in Beaumont or so. And this is how I spotted him. He had such a strong face. Yes, okay, he said. And I took, like with everybody, I took 5-6 photos to have at least one or two I could use for the portraits I had and printed out at the Ilach. And they sat here and I looked at them for 2 days or 3 days painting these portraits. And funny enough, Dot didn't even want his portrait when it was done. I said, it's yours. No, Dietmeyer, it's fine. So, well, he was one of my favorite portraits for a long time. It still is, still of the strongest paintings, I think. It looks watercolorish. It's done very loosely, but it's still Dot. Not too realistic, you know. And funny enough, a few weeks after I had met Dot at in Beaumont, he approached me and he said, "Dietmeyer, is the painting still available?" I said, "Of course it's available. It's yours. You can have it." "Oh yes, please, can I have it?" And so I carried it, drove it around in my car, just in case I would meet him. And so I did. A few weeks later, I met him and I gave him the portrait. And he was very pleased with it. Yeah.
And what about the reaction you had from the other sitters, as we would say?
Well, then they were not sitters. You couldn't expect somebody sitting in here for 2 days. And I guess painting from a live model is something I never really tried. I did some live drawing as a student in Manchester, I remember, and I really enjoyed this. But no, it's much easier, I think, to paint from photos, and it's much easier for my victims.
I call them sitters, you call them victims.
Yeah. No, I mean, I would never hand over a painting I'm not happy with. So I was always hoping people were satisfied or appreciated their portrait. But I had to learn that everybody sees its own face or portrait different than other people do. Which is not a surprise. I mean, if you listen to your own voice being recorded, even on your answering machine, it feels strange, doesn't it? So I never thought of it, but it might be the same with a portrait.
Mm.
It is the same. And it's probably especially the same with female people I portrait. It's much easier to deal with guys. That's what I also learned. Yeah. Funny enough. Yeah. There are a few people which didn't agree to have their portrait exhibited. They said, and two of them are some of my very favorite paintings. And unfortunately, they couldn't be in the exhibition. I have prints of them. I won't show them to you. These people said they were too shy. They don't want their photos, their images to be displayed in the public. And one, the wife of one of my friends I wanted to paint strongly because he has such a strong face as well. She said, "Dima, forget it. He doesn't even want to be on photos in our holidays. If you look at our holiday photos, it's just me." No. So, well, however, painting a portrait takes usually 2 days. And painting it twice or three times. There were two I painted 4 times before I was happy. I mean, I didn't finish all the 3 previous paintings before the 4th one was okay. Sometimes you just realize the eyes are just not right or the nose is too long. And it's not like a landscape. You can get away with a hill being a bit higher or a tree a bit more bushy, whatever. Yeah. But in a face, I mean, especially the eyes and the nose, and the mouth, I mean, the face has to be right.
Mm-hmm.
So you, at some point, if you realize this is not leading, this is not ending well, you better start again. So you just start again, which can be frustrating, but it's worth it.
But you notice when you're at the Gaelic Centre, the one with Dot, you just go for his eyes. You know, as soon as you see his eye, you know it's him. You don't have to look at his nose or his mouth, as you say.
Mm.
You just look straight at his eyes. And you know it's him.
Now he has strong features, like around the mouth and the chin is very, very pronounced, and the shape of the head.
I noticed at the college that some of them were in, I would call, black and white.
Monochrome.
Is that the word?
Well, I asked people, this is Chris Abel.
Chris Abel was black and white. One, yes.
Yes. And who else is black? However, Chris, when I asked Chris, as I did ask everybody, what his favorite color was, because the idea was to use their favorite color, he said black, Dietmar, and he obviously is black. So I had the information, black is his favorite color, and I always check the eye color, because you don't want to go wrong with the eye color, and he has blue eyes. So I just enhanced the blue a little bit, so the painting is not really monochrome, But the black and the grey portrayed makes the blue eyes really stick out, which is a lovely effect. And Ruri, who works at Art Berg, he said green. Green is not the easiest color for a portrait because it's so alien to human skin. And you have to be careful not to do another Hulk kind of thing, you know. But I really like his painting. He looks really cool in green, especially in the white frame he chose. Like everybody, he chose the frame for the painting, which adds to the character of the exhibition. Mm-hmm. So people chose the favorite color and the color for the portrait, if you so will. And they chose the frame, which Mark Unsworth and his wife used.
So the painting was done by you, which was how would you say, there was no charge for that?
No. Well, I just like the idea of this project. I will have to ask for payment now if people would approach me, because I have to pay my electrical bill and my concert tax, and in the end this is my job. I mean, I used to be a designer, but although I run a B&B, I see myself as an artist, and as I sell my landscapes and my flowers and my car paintings, I would also have to sell portraits. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, are you not are you going to do an exhibition on it and have them for sale?
Yes, I will. I mean, look, these paintings behind you, and they're more in the cupboard, the framed landscapes, they will go up the day I take the portraits
down. But I know that you did your article in the Eelach, and are you on Facebook or...
The Eelach did an article on me.
All right.
The Eelach.
We'll rephrase that. The Eelach did an article on you, with your permission, of course.
Of course, yes.
So you did an article in the Eelach. We could argue the point. So will you be using the Eelach and the community...
The notice board?
Yes.
The community notice board? To promote? Yes, I think so. I'm not sure if I'm again putting an advert in the Eelach, which was in the same edition. But I would be happy if Brian or one of his colleagues came and asked a few questions. This is a local newspaper. And these things happening in a community, they should be in this local newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is what makes the whole thing interesting, isn't it? Of course, I will also put something on the Isla Community Notice Board. Probably it's a different, what do you call it, segment, of audience. Probably younger people are more social media. It's still nice to have print media in your hand, yeah? And probably... I might keep the page with my report, at least to show my mother when I go back to Germany. You know.
You are working.
No, I think it's good to have the Eelach. It's good to have the Eelach besides social media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what about the younger, as you said earlier, what about the younger generation? Have you ever thought of doing something to tempt the kids or the children? Like at the high school with the art classes,
I would love to, and it's probably a bit too early to mention. But I was approached by a girl, a lady I know since a while. If I wanted to just do something with youth on Isla, I would love to. I would love to. There's so much talent on Isla. I'm constantly surprised by how many skilled people we have. Not only art, also other stuff, and I would love to give them a few, ideas of how to paint, how to sketch, how to express feelings on paper, on canvas, or whatever. Yeah. I have already reserved like a 2-3 week period in the Gaelic College for an exhibition I have in mind on the occasion of COP26, the climate conference. I'm still kind of, I'm pregnant with the idea, if you want, so I'm still working on it. But it's not an exhibition of like my artwork. It's something which I hope would involve as many locals as possible who would contribute, who could contribute, and just fill a frame with something, maybe a painting or words or a collage or God knows, about climate change and what we are doing to this poor planet. So the idea is to create, and I have started already, to create like 8 or 10 posters which will go in these, my frames. They will all have different colors but the same typeface and the same style, and they might be like the red line of the arc of the exhibition, and in between there could be anything, you know, designed or done by kids or by adults, probably discussing or displaying ideas what we can do, especially on Isla, to help this poor planet. Yeah. So I'm really looking forward to this, but it's hard to activate people, individuals.
Well, I'm sure there'll be a lot of activity soon regarding your forward planning. We will say, what an interesting afternoon, and I've learned a lot, as I always do when I speak to people who have ideas and who obviously work for and with the community, of moving the community forward. So to you, sir, we'll say thank you and goodbye.
During our conversation, it became clear that in developing his portraits, Dietmar's approach becomes very personal. For a single portrait, he may have spent little or no time in conversation with his subject, but over several days, working from photographs, the process becomes almost intimate as he tries to capture the essence of the person in the photograph, their energy and spirit of life, past and present, as he builds up the final portrait. He's also clearly touched by the comments from his subjects and their families and friends. The Isla Faces exhibition closed on June the 26th and has been replaced by a new exhibition of landscape watercolours by Dietmar, entitled Isla Impressions. Otherwise, you can find Dietmar online at fingerpainting.de, on Facebook, and on summer Thursdays at the Art and Craft Fair in Brooklady Hall. That's all we have time for in this episode. I hope you've enjoyed our conversations with Pat, Catherine, and Dietmar. I'd also like to thank Glenn and Russell. If you have a story to tell or would like to join the team at This Is Isla, please get in touch by email at thisisisla@gmail.com. Follow us on social media, on Facebook and Twitter at This Is Isla, and on Instagram at This Is Isla Podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Thanks again for joining us. Goodbye.
I'm Sharon McHardy. You've been listening to This Is Isla, the people, places, events and connections of Isla and Jura. And we invite you to join us again next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of This Is Isla Podcast. Our theme song is Rift Cash Cashback by Fraser Fox.